Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It's almost 50 years since the last Apollo mission ventured to the lunar surface. The American Space Agency has been given the go-ahead to launch a giant new moon rocket this coming Monday. Now, it won't have any people on board, but it's going to lay the groundwork for the astronauts to return in 2 years' time. And the plan is to build a base camp there for future missions and eventually move on to explore Mars. And to explain all of this, I'm joined now in the studio by Kevin Nolan, who's lecturer in physics at the Technological University Dublin. You're very welcome, Kevin.
Pleasure.
Why has it taken 50 years?
Well, it's unbelievably complex. I mean, when Apollo was happening, that was costing the 3% of the GDP of America. Each Saturn V launch was the GDP of Ireland at the time. That's the expense. So it was unsustainable. They had to cancel down. Now, we've had amazing success with satellites and Hubble Space Telescopes and all the rest of it, but it has actually taken literally these decades to figure out how to do it sustainably. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing now, they've built a new rocket called the Space Launch System, but it runs at less than a quarter the cost of Saturn V. You know, some parts of the project only a tenth of the cost. So if you think about it, no other nation has done this in between. Like, only the US has still come back 50 years later. China might be catching up, but they're still a decade or two away from this kind of effort. But it's just that challenging. And even in relation to your last piece, society will only accept so much expense in going into space.
So it makes financial sense?
Yep. It's possible to do in the kind of budgets that the US Congress is prepared to give NASA.
And why then the focus on returning to the moon? Why is that so important?
Yeah, I mean, as Carl Sagan said, going into space, into Earth orbit, is going nowhere. It's just the eternal, you know, perpetual societal problem or a desire to explore. And going into deep space has always been the desire. And it's not just because it's there. I mean, space industry is worth $500 billion a year. So there's, you know, this is not just that NASA are ready. There's a new ecosystem of private enterprise who want to go into deep space. There's iron on near-Earth asteroids. There's resources on the moon, things like this. So we're looking kind of forward, and this is now not just going back to the moon, as you pointed out in the introduction, it's more a permanent presence forevermore in deep space. And that, I think, for this young generation who never saw anybody landing on the moon, is going to be incredibly
exciting.
They're
going to build there, right?
They are. They're going to do three missions, as you said. This is an unmanned test, which is absolutely necessary. It's all brand new technology. Two people around the moon in 2024, and then they hope, as they say in the documentation, to land the first woman and the first person of colour on the moon in 2025. So, and then for there evermore, then they hope once a year with European Space Agency, like Irish taxpayers' money has gone into this, because we've built a small part of the rocket that's launched on Monday through the European Space Agency. They hope to do one launch a year and build a lunar base there maybe by the end of the decade, and already a lunar space station going around the moon, which is already under construction, again part European built.
So this then is a hugely important mission, this first leg.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right, it's monumental, it's pivotal for the future of NASA. This has to go right, and it's more powerful than Saturn V. Like, if it was being launched in Cork, you'd hear it in Dublin. That's how powerful this is. So this is the biggest rocket ever built. It's more powerful than Saturn V. This is on a pure excitement. This is a very exciting. It's a different scale to what we've witnessed in recent years.
So it's going to take off from the Kennedy Space Center, isn't that right, in Florida? So you talked about the power there, the noise. Tell us more about it. It's Artemis 1, it's
Artemis called. 1, yeah. So they've been building the Space Launch System for the last 20 years since the shuttle Columbia destroyed. That's when they decided, let's do this differently. Now, there's been controversy because it's been overruns and expensive, and now we've got SpaceX come along building an even bigger rocket they hope to have in the next few years. So the thing is that this, as you say, this Space Launch System has to work because you've cheaper options coming up behind the scenes. But for now, this is the only game in town, and they've been carefully building it for the last 10 years or so and aiming, as I said, to build this huge rocket that runs far cheaper than Saturn V.
What's changed? Because back when the Apollo landings happened, there was this big space race, the race to the moon. Everyone has pulled back from that, haven't they?
They have. I mean, there just isn't the same political intensity. Now, the thing is that as much as you might say the US wanted to do this, China have huge ambitions in this regard in real practical terms, and that the USA have had their eye on that ball as well. So that's given them an extra push. So make no bones about it, there is a little bit of political competition going on here.
But again, it comes back to the finances, the money, and what people will accept when it comes to spending, right?
Yeah, it has to happen in the NASA budget. That's the only way.
Okay, you mentioned the Irish involvement in the European Space Agency. I mean, this is an international, almost international effort.
It is an international effort. Now, Ireland aren't directly putting stuff in, but we pay into the European Space Agency about 70 million euro a year. And the actual command module, or the service module that will bring these astronauts to the moon was built in Europe by the European Space Agency. And it's the most sophisticated spaceship ever built. So basically, the thing is that if you look at Airbus, which is a European company, and I'm not just saying this as kind of rhetoric, for young Irish graduates who might think they want to get involved in this, they can, because we've Airbus on our doorstep and they have big contracts at NASA now. NASA and ESA like working together, and ESA used to like working with Roscosmos in Russia, but that's the apple cart's been upended by the Ukraine war, literally. Mm-hmm. So the European Space Agency are looking to strengthen ties with NASA as we speak.
Okay, what will we be able to see on Monday? Can we witness any of
this? Well, they will stream it live and it will be global news, and basically what we will see is a rocket launch. But there will be a 6-week mission where this Orion spacecraft, new spacecraft unmanned, will go around the moon. They'll image it, it'll go within 100 kilometres of the moon, and then it will come back and do the, you know, the classic splash down in the Pacific Ocean outside San Diego, and there'll be an American big ship there to pick it up with the big parachutes. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a full dress rehearsal, and then, as you say, in 2 years' time they'll do this with people in it.
And what are they putting on the rocket?
So, well, they've got a mannequin actually in there with 5,000 sensors on it, basically to try and figure out how does radiation affect people, because we don't know all the answers or anything like it. So they're learning hugely here. They're sending 10 little space probes called CubeSats in and around the moon to explore it and land on it, and basically just monitor the moon environment to, again, learn everything they can. I mean, we kind of say it's a test mission as if that's not that interesting. They have to do this. They have to get it right. And it's going to be, as I say, a big deal.
Does it feel, Kevin, as we're talking, that we've taken a step back from Apollo? You know, one small step and now we're just flying around it, and then 2 years later we'll hopefully get people on there.
Yeah, you might say that, but again, I think it comes back to the point that the USA spent, as I say, 3% of their GDP to get people to the moon in a political race. This is doing it long term. And as you said, the aspiration then is to have people permanently on the moon and then to start build towards sending people to Mars, which is at least 100 times more challenging than sending people to the moon.
Mm-hmm. So this could end up being a commercial venture as well.
There will be commercial interest in this, absolutely. The likes of Boeing, Airbus are the commercial enterprise. SpaceX want to get involved as well. And the thing is, as I say, it's permanent. That's why this is different. I think it's going to be very exciting for the young generation to literally witness people land on the moon and then see us build towards Mars. This perennial question, why aren't we on Mars? Well, we're trying to do it now.
Mm-hmm. And of course, no one knows what's going to be found on the moon either. What natural resources are going to be found there?
Yeah, well, when you say that's partially true, but we've been surveying the moon with orbiters for the last decade or so.
I suppose what I'm trying to get at is, what could be the commercial interest other than space tourism that could result from something like
this? Well, in the long run, now this is decades away, but there are dozens, if not hundreds of startups around the world doing this. There are massive resources on the moon and in space. There are little near-Earth asteroids, just are pure iron. There's all sorts of resources on the surface of the moon, from magnesium, iron, all these different ores. There's plenty of water there. So the actual, as fanciful as it might sound, the objective ultimately commercially is to say, if we're running out of resources on the Earth, we might find them in space. Now, that's, as I say, a big commercial question.
Destroy our own planet, so go somewhere else and do it.
Yeah, well, again, and I'm big into the sustainability. In fact, NASA have declared what they call the Artemis Accords to do this internationally in peace and actually sustainably with, you know, environmental sensitivity. It's a reflection of the old 1967 Space Treaty, and they're trying to get other countries to sign up to it. Not all have, because not all maybe want to think about doing it sustainably, but actually in this particular venture, they are genuinely trying to do it sustainably and not just rip up the moon, you know, go there and rip it.
And what are the Chinese plans on moon travel and moon landings and so on?
Well, the Chinese do hope to send people to the moon. They have a kind of a bigger, broader plan. They're decades behind, so they've now built a space station like the International Space Station, smaller. They're very advanced, more advanced, say, than Europe in terms of getting astronauts into space. Now, there's no specific timeline, but they want to land people on Mars, or sorry, on the moon, and they actually want to land people on Mars by 2049, the 100th anniversary of the Declaration of the People's Republic. They've stated this in white paper. So it's clear to everybody, and they're not hiding these ambitions, by the way. They're just saying, we're ambitious, we want to be number one in space, and America is watching that.
Well, that means we can't rule out another space race, right?
Yeah.
Because
it's kind of there.
This is ultimately leading, what we're talking about now, is leading to exploration on Mars.
Yes.
So it's whether this gets there first or the Chinese.
Yeah. It is, but by the same token, I think actually there's only so much of an appetite for this kind of race. As I said to you, it isn't just that Congress decides. When they poll the public kind of say, yeah, we're prepared to spend X number of billions in space, but that's it.
But not beyond that. We were all so very excited about the pictures that were coming back from the James Webb
Space Telescope.
Yeah, telescope. What's happening there? What's that up to now?
So James Webb's image is Jupiter in a way that we've never seen before. It looks like a beautiful crystal ball. It's like a heat map, but with the resolution of Hubble Space Telescope. So, I mean, that image is unprecedented in science, and every colour, if you go online and look, you'll see they're beautiful, but every colour or wisp is different to like a Hubble image. Every colour or shade is a different thing happening. It's like, is it, like, you know, like you see a heat monitor of a human's body, and you see the heart pumping and the you know, the different organs kind of the body. So that's kind of it with Jupiter. We're seeing Jupiter, how it works in high definition.
Which must be incredible for someone like you with a physics background.
Well, absolutely, but for all of us, because it's not just going to be looking actually at Jupiter, it's be looking at all the objects of the solar system to tell us, for example, why does Mars, you know, is a desert? Why is Venus super hot? We try and understand these planets to tell us about our own climate as well. So this telescope will tell us about the workings of the solar system. Hubble might have shown us how what it looks like. This is literally almost like a forensic analysis of how things work.
It's been an incredible success, hasn't it, the James Webb telescope?
It has. And again, that was another one that was over budget and delayed. It had to be successful. And you're absolutely right. The first images from it are absolutely mind-blowing. And in fact, they'd hoped, this is a little federal cap for Europe, they'd hoped maybe get 10 years out of it. They launched it so well and used so little fuel in the launch, they think they might get 15 or 20 years out of it. So there's a very exciting future for James Webb as well.
Incredible. Kevin, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And it's so interesting. We'll all be watching with great interest on Monday when Artemis takes off and carries on its journey with its mannequin. With how many monitors on it?
5,600.
To be precise. Kevin Nolan, lecturer in physics at TU Dublin. Thank you very much, Kevin, for coming into us.
My pleasure.
We'll be back after this break.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.